This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. I'm Chris and with me in the studio...
This is Gordon.
And I was Phil when I got here, but I'm not too sure where here is anymore. Well, I know where here is, I'm not sure when is.
Been There, Done That is Joy's history program. Well, we've made it that. Told it.
We talk about anything.
That's right. That's just a general excuse to describe the tone of the program. We believe that we know a lot about anything or a lot about nothing. So we're going to pound your ears.
We know a lot about little things and little things about a lot of things. And we don't claim to have been there and done that with every subject that we cover.
We've got quite a range of subjects today, not a lot of which is actually gay related. But not to worry. It's the world we live in and we are affected with history.
Well, of course we are. History affects everybody. It doesn't matter whether you're gay, straight or whatever. And if you don't learn from history, you are going to repeat your mistakes. Phil is sitting over there very quiet. I don't think he's ever made a mistake.
Well, I'm perfect. I thought I was wrong once, but I was mistaken.
In today's show, we'll be talking about the Aboriginal flag and a new display that's been put up in the central square of Adelaide that's related to that. We'll be talking about the French celebrations coming up on the 14th of July in celebration of Bastille Day. And then a year later, they celebrated Unity Day. Now, that was a little bit interesting. And we'll also have a look at how the French have done marriage equality. We'll be talking about communication, about Shakespeare and his contribution to the English language of about another 1,700 words that hadn't been into real existence until he decided that, yes, he needed those sort of words in his plays, in his communications. We'll be talking about the pop-up Globe Theatre that's due to rock on to Melbourne very, very soon. We'll also be talking about Helen Keller, the first blind and deaf person, but she was able to communicate very effectively. And we'll talk generally about political unrest in the rest of the world and hope that this is a passing phase, but I don't think we should hold our hopes up too much.
It's not a new idea.
No, it isn't, certainly. Yeah. No.
Well, last week we celebrated NAIDOC. But Bill, you're telling me that this week is a different week.
We've got a very special commemoration of a 1972 Melbourne Medical Conference where nobody showed up.
Oh, right.
It's NAIDOC Week.
NAIDOC Week. Okay.
Oh. I got that out of my system.
Glad you got rid of that one. But once again, South Australia is coming to the fore as far as Indigenous affairs go, because it was in Adelaide that they first flew the
Indigenous flag in 1971 on the 12th of July. The Aboriginal flag is the one that's dominated in the middle with the yellow sun, red on the lower half and black on the upper half.
Mm-hmm.
And it was first flown in Victoria Square, Adelaide, right in the centre, opposite the GPO in Adelaide, on National Aborigines Day, 12th of July 1971. And the flag was created by Aboriginal activist and artist Harold Thomas. And he chose the red ochre to represent the red soil and the black to represent the Aboriginal people, and the pride being black in Australia. The yellow sun was chosen for his commonality as a colour used in Aboriginal art, but also because Thomas regarded it as a symbol for all people.
I think it's a great flag because you understand immediately what it is.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting that they did it in South Australia, because in the old days, before Federation, Aboriginal people in South Australia were allowed to own land. They could own land and they could vote, they could do everything that the white settlers could do over there. They made that as one of their things. But, of course, when Federation came in and the the Indigenous community was not recognised, they lost all their rights to the land that they had been living on and had owned and bought and were farming and doing things with, and they were kicked off the land, and that was it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure about being kicked off, but at least there was no title resident with the new occupiers.
That's right, yeah, but this is the problem, and the Indigenous people were disenfranchised from the land that they had originally been on and were able to own in under the system that they had at the time. Yeah.
What is it about South Australia, though, that seems to make them more progressive people?
Because they were never... South Australia was the only free state in Australia. There was never, ever prisoners or the convicts going there. That was done by Mr. Angus, I think his name was.
Yes.
Was it Angus? He was the fellow that formed a company in Britain to bring new migrants to South Australia as free migrants and all the rest of it.
So but they seem to have a better attitude with the local Aboriginal population.
Well, this is what happened when they got there. They didn't kick the Aboriginals off the land. They were able to use their own land and stay with it. But
think,
of course, they were the first state to give women the vote in Australia.
Yeah, but I would expect that New South Wales and Victoria have had longer to learn and deal with these topics, whereas South Australia just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, but see, New South Wales and Victoria was part of New South Wales originally, was ruled by the army and the police force, and the people were only convicts, and so they had no rights or anything. And this is what happened, and they sort of basically kicked the
Well, they were invading the Indigenous land,
right,
weren't they?
That's right, yeah, yeah. But anyhow.
However, a new Aboriginal artwork has been unveiled in Adelaide.
Again.
It's images drawn by schoolchildren and then created in South Australian granite stone. And the cultural marker is in the paving in Victoria Square, where the first Aboriginal flag was unveiled. And it's a symbol of the local people empowering for the Indigenous students involved in its creation and help them embrace their identity. It's rather special because it's in the meeting place in the centre of Adelaide, but was the meeting place for the local Aborigines. So there's a lot of symbolism in this, and it's lit at night with solar-powered light. So it's a very modern type of thing.
It's a I always like Victoria Square. I think it's one of the prettiest squares in Australia, actually. It's got beautiful buildings all around it, and it's just lovely. And the tram goes right through it now. It used to be the start of the Glenelg tram, but now the Glenelg tram has been sent straight up the main street and around the corner past the casino and a bit further on.
Mm. Yeah.
But we've now got Fed Square, which is another place altogether.
And it's interesting in the wording that the local Adelaide City Council used when this was opened. They said Victoria Square was a fitting location because it was a central meeting place for local mobs. Now, there's a marker here acknowledging these are the nation's first people.
Good on South Australia. I tell you what, I came in to the little soiree we had here on Friday evening at Joy.
Yes.
And I did notice that somebody had put an Aboriginal flag on one of those bollards down near Fed Square, and I thought, how good. That's really, really good.
Well, they'd had a demonstration down Bourke Street earlier in the day.
That's right, and that's why they put the thing there. But I believe they've done a lot of bollards and things over in Spencer Street Station with the Aboriginal flag, yeah, which is great. I love it. Yeah.
But these people in Adelaide were quite clever because they had school kids do the artwork.
That's right.
You don't have to pay them. The same with Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd?
With the album The Wall.
The Wall.
They had the kids singing We Don't Need No Education.
Yeah.
They are yet to be paid and they're now adults.
We'll be getting to Shakespeare a bit later with his words and phrases, yes.
Also, though, on the 14th of July 1814, the book in which Matthew Flinders proposed the name of Terra Australis for the southern continent is published.
That's where the name Australia came from.
Well, it had been known as Van Diemen's Land for Tasmania.
And New Holland. All bits and pieces.
And all these other mobs that had actually bumped into Australia from the exploration countries in the world, they gave it a name, the Great Southern Land and things like this. Mm.
What do the two words mean? You've got terra.
Terra is earth. It's
right,
Latin
so
earth.
It's referring to the island.
The Australis was...
The southern
continent.
Okay. Mm. And from that, we've eventually come around to being Australia.
Australia. 1824, was
Australia.
It?
Australia.
1804, 1824.
That's right. We've lost a few letters.
And as we know, Matthew Flinders was an English sea explorer known for his exploration around Australia, and he added significantly to the knowledge of the coastline, and his meticulous observation and calculations enabled him to produce accurate maps.
Phil, it's quite interesting when you see the map, well, you see Australia from the a GPS thing.
From a satellite.
It's exactly what Matthew Flinders did drew it as. Yeah, there's very,
and
very
what
little
kind
wrong
of
with
skill
it.
Is that to map the coast from a boat?
Yeah.
I can't... Do you imagine that you're in the air and looking down?
No.
It's all
it's
done by...
It's just your calculations of from as you're going past the coast. You know with your own GPS of that time where you are.
Sextant and all those things, that they knew where the sun was, and they would get down, they knew that they'd gone so many miles.
See, with all this technology we've got now, we must have lost a lot of skills.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Because there'll be people going around using their GPS, and one day that satellite's going to fall out of the sky and we're going to be doomed.
Oh, but they keep putting more up there, Phil.
You're friends with those little satellites.
Mm.
After James Cook claimed the continent for England in 1770, the entire eastern half became known as New South Wales, and some years after his exploration, Flinders wrote an account of his voyages just after his return to England. And he called that A Voyage to Terra Australis. And that was published, as I said, on the 1814th in July, and one day before the poor fellow died. So at least he got to see his book in print. And that's where he proposed the name Terra Australis be adopted for the southern continent. And in 1824, the anglicised version of that, Australia, became the official name.
Oh, that's nice. And in the 1960s, there was a pub named after Matthew Flinders near Chadstone.
Oh, yeah.
The Matthew Flinders Hotel.
On the 14th of July, 1960, was born Jane Lynch.
Oh,
now,
the wonderful
who's Jane Lynch?
Well, she started her career in a movie called Best in Show, which was about a dog show, which is one of the funniest movies you're ever likely to see. If you can get hold of a copy and you haven't seen it, just watch it, because Jane is the dog handler in that when she was the very first movie role. She had been a comedian broadcasting in different parts of the United States. And she had finished up in Los Angeles or something rather, and she was cast.
It's a mockumentary. It's a very funny film.
That's an interesting little word that's been invented, mockumentary.
Because it's presented as a document or a documentary film. It's fictional and it's comedic.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily all scripted. Everybody is told who their character is and they play their roles. And it comes across as very realistic, no matter how completely stupid it is.
Yes, that's right.
And it's the same people who made Spinal Tap. So if you've got that sense of humour, it's warped, but it's I guess...
gently warped.
It's the Americans' best attempt at satire and irony. And they're typically not good at that.
And what else do we know Jane Lynch as?
We've got Jane Lynch as Sue Sylvester, the PE teacher in Glee. The show Glee.
The PE teacher from hell.
Well, she was always trying to get hold of the students out of Mr. Will Schuster. That's him. Yes, Mr. Schuster. And poor old Mr. Schuster had to put up with his woman taking all his
Well, she
class.
Was trying to shut down the Glee Club.
That's right. She hated the Glee Club because she wanted all her students to be physically perfect.
And cheerleaders.
Cheerleaders, yes.
And the Glee Club was known as New Directions.
It was set up to
give... That's different from One Direction.
Yeah, it was set up to give the children in the school an opportunity to be themselves, whether they were gay, straight, or whatever they were, and show the talents that they had.
So it was quite an affirming show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And they had some great... They always had a good guest artist in as well. Somebody would always be there as a guest artist while they were doing the thing, and they would be a performer who...
Doesn't hurt the ratings either.
They would then have that performer do something to get their glee, because they were going to want to always be in the Nationals, which was the competition for the glee clubs around the thing. And there was a lovely romance went on between one of the boys and the other boy in another school. And
wow,
it was really great.
That's good.
Great movie.
Let's hear from Jane. Oh, no, let's... Yes, we'll hear from Jane, and then we'll hear from the full cast with Let's Get Physical. Now, I hope that is the Olivia Newton-John song.
It is the Olivia Newton-John song.
Not in your own joy. Been there, done that. Stay tuned. There's more.
Hey, this is Jane Lynch, and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Chris Gordon and Phil, Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us. 14th of July, we've been using the 14th of July quite often today already.
That's going to be a big day for some in one country and for their people that come from that country, of course.
It is Bastille Day.
Accordingly.
And Bastille Day celebrates the uprising of the people against the aristocracy.
They wanted their rights back.
The Bastille event was in 14th of July 1789, the storming of the Bastille. But then 1 year later was what they called Fête de la Fédération, Unity Day. So they decided that the battle was over and they had won, and now it's a matter of getting down to work and living the new life.
Liberty, equality, fraternity.
Yeah.
But of course, straight after the Bastille Day came the absolute worst part of the whole thing, when they were cutting people's heads off left, right and centre. Anybody that happened to be a royal got their head bopped.
Well.
So the storming of the Bastille,
yes,
was the public revolting.
Republic revolt. They were revolting.
Well, if you're going to get your head cut off, you'd have that opinion.
Yes, wouldn't you?
And then they had all the...
The reign of terror then started from that.
And then, literally 1 year later, it's all settled down and they're united.
No, it went for a lot longer than 1 year, but I think they just called it that day just to sort of make something out of it. But they were revolting, and it was a pretty horrific time if you happen to have a bit of money or anything. And Charles Dickens wrote that wonderful story about the Bastille.
A Tale of Two Cities. I had to get that right way around.
Yeah, it's not a Tale of Two Cities.
No. Dr. Spooner could have had us.
Our language has been corrupted.
Yeah, but it was the whole thing about that. Yeah, yeah. And of course, then they had The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Orksy, which was another great book about the...
So if, in fact, you read some of these novels, you get a flavour of the events
of the time.
What was going on, yeah. And they actually weren't particularly reinterpreting history, because they were...
They were actually writing it.
Yeah. So that's why you've got to consider that some of these old-fashioned books are probably better than modern interpretations of historical events.
But right at the moment they're having the Tour de France, the bike race all around France, and that when they get to the 14th of July and they're still racing, and there always seems to be racing on the 14th of July, and the parties and the businesses that go on while they're going through the French towns, it's quite amazing. They all come out in their millions. They reckon there's something like about 10 million people watch the Tour de France live. They're out on the street watching it go past.
I remember one of my trips to Europe, I actually landed on the 15th of July on a Sunday into Paris's airport. And I just sailed through everything and got into the city without any drama.
Of course you would.
Everybody was exhaustified from the day before, when it was parade day and celebrations.
Another thing about the French is that they have They do have equal marriage, which is
I was going to say, apart from anything else, they've had a change of government and they've had Monsieur Macron.
I'll tell you what, he's not ugly to look at, is he?
No, now he's actually set up his own little political party in the last couple of years.
Well, it's only since he got elected as president, because he then had to have an election to form a thing,
but
he got all his own people in him.
It's an interesting way they do of quitting all their old, worn-out hack politicians.
Oh, that could happen a few places.
Wouldn't we like to adopt that principle here?
Yes.
But we've got famous comedians like Abbott and Costello.
Yeah.
We can't let these people go.
But one thing I like about the way they do things in France is that you are not legally married if you just go into a church.
Oh.
You have to be married in a civil ceremony at the town hall or whatever.
Yeah.
Then you can go off and have your church wedding if you want to. But you're not legally married until you are married at a civil ceremony.
So the sequence is always the civil ceremony first, and then you go with that piece of paper to the church.
That's right.
And the church can do their thing.
Do what they do. But I think you can also have your church wedding first and then go off and have your second one. But you must be married in a civil court for the government to recognise your marriage.
Right.
But that's not hugely different to us.
Well,
you can be in a church, but you still need to sign marriage licence.
Well, it's just sign the documents and everything, but the church does not have the power in
Well, the church
France.
Aren't marrying you. Yeah, are they?
They
think they are.
Yeah, that's right.
But until you sign that bit of paper, you're not married.
That's right, yeah. But it's just a different system that seems to work very, very well.
Yeah. And, of course, they're ahead of us.
And they're ahead of us.
Equal rights. Imagine that as a
interesting
concept.
To see that the senator from WA, who happens to be gay, is going to put forward a private member's bill.
Yeah.
And
Malcolm's away, you see.
Malcolm said he's not going to take it. No, it's a plebiscite or nothing. And I thought to myself, I'll get some balls.
Of all the policies to stick to, it's the one we don't want.
It was voted down in the Parliament, so that means it doesn't have to be done. They're only scared that they say they'll be breaking a promise, but, God, how many promises have they broken anyhow?
Oh, but we don't talk about those ones.
Bring on the equal rights is what I'm saying.
Exactly.
Yes,
someone born on the 10th of July 1954 is Neil Tennant, an English musician, singer-songwriter, musical journalist.
Would he be paying the rent?
And co-founder of the synth-pop duo Pet Shop Boys, which he formed with Chris Lowe in 1981. Mm. And in celebration, well, we've got one of their tracks.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us. Round about this time, we need to look at the Globe Theatre. Where is that, you say? I'm talking about the Globe Theatre on the South Bank in London. It actually burnt down on the 29th of June in 1613 during the first performance of Shakespeare's Henry VIII. Apparently during the performance of Henry VIII, a theatrical cannon was set off, but it misfired and ignited the wooden beams and the thatching. I mean, hello, you just would not do that. But that was some building materials they had at the time.
That's exactly.
No one was hurt except a man whose burning britches were put out with a bottle of ale. What a waste
of ale.
Yes. No one was severely injured during the event, but the building was rebuilt the following year.
Oh, well, there's a good omen, isn't it, doing Henry VIII? Of course, in modern days, I think for every time you're having a live frame on a flame in a theatre, you have to have two people from the fire brigade standing in the wings just in case.
Well, they used to have fire curtains as well, because the footlights were in fact naked flame.
That's where you get limelight from.
It's interesting that, of course, the Shakespearean Globe Theatre was where William Shakespeare presented a lot of his plays for not the rich people necessary to look at and be educated by, but for the common person. Because they didn't have TV, they couldn't afford newspapers, they could only listen to the Latin in the churches or things like this. And Shakespeare had a good turn of phrase, and he used modern language, the language of the time, and he told his stories in such a way that there was cheering from the seats. Throw in comments to the actors. Get on with it, or, you know.
Yeah, but they stood. They didn't sit. There was no seats in the Globe Theatre. They all stood. And this is when they bring the new Globe that they're bringing out here, the pop-up Globe Theatre that they're going to be using in Melbourne, in the not in the Botanic Gardens, it's in the long since St Kilda Road anyhow. They've got a space where they're going to set up the pop-up theatre. You'll just stand there and watch the performances as they used to do them. And it's already just come from New Zealand. They've been performing in New Zealand. And so they're going to be performing here in Australia.
Do you like listening to Shakespeare's prose?
Well, I've just been to see Macbeth, done by the Melbourne Theatre Company.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely bloody brilliant. It was real. You have to tune your
ears,
listening
and your
devices to what is they're actually saying, because they don't speak in the language that we're speaking now. It is his prose and what have you is, it's very flowery. It's but it means you understand what they're talking about when they talk the Shakespearean language, but it's very, very convoluted sometimes,
yeah.
I guess, you know, but it was a brilliant performance, but I'm not sure what they're doing in the what the program is for the pop-up Globe Theatre.
Well, it's probably something more contemporary where they have Macbeth and McNuggets and some fries and a Coke.
That's right.
Oh, no.
Will they use electric lighting, maybe?
But Shakespeare was a very clever writer. If he wrote all that he's supposed to have written, because there's still...
Him or Mr. Bacon.
Yeah, no, it's Thomas Marlowe.
Marlowe
was the other fellow.
So not Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, not Kevin Bacon, no. But if Shakespeare didn't have a word, he would invent one. If he wanted to, he'd invent a word. And it's words like caked, cater, champion, circumstantial, and cold-blooded were all written into his plays because he didn't have a word to... there wasn't a word in English at the time. He wrote something like about 1760 words or something or other, which were included in his plays. A lot of them a lot of them have gone by the boards. We don't use them anymore, but there is a huge list of words that actually Shakespeare invented and put in his plays, and
now,
words we use every day.
Yeah, simple words like dwindle.
Yes.
You know what that is, don't you?
Yeah, but that surely is a sign of the times, because... Not everybody would have had much language skills.
They would have spoken the language that they'd been brought up with not much variation to any...
Yeah, their vocabulary would have been limited.
And it took people because people were not that educated in those days. The upper crust were, because I think it was Henry VIII that started Oxford University. I'm pretty sure he had something to do with one of those, Oxford or Cambridge or something. And the upper crust would be going and learning to speak and all the rest of it.
But they didn't travel either.
They didn't travel.
Which is why you've got your accents around London, which are the same language but sound completely different.
Yeah, but see, this is where the what's-name gets in about Shakespeare writing the plays. He never travelled either, except between Stratford-on-Avon and London, and yet he could write very well about what happened in Venice, in The Merchant of Venice, what happened to Othello, and all this thing about a country that he never, ever visited.
That's right. He told them about Denmark and the royalty there.
That's right. He never visited these places. And this is why they say that he was probably getting letters written back to him from people like Marlowe and anybody that travelled.
Mm.
And he would make up the stories about it. But his description of what went on in Italy is just absolutely amazing.
Mm. Well, I'm looking at a bit of a list here, and I can see some very modern words, or words that were still
used
today. Advertising.
Mm.
Birthplace. Fancy that. He's put two words together and
made a
new single word, which has a different meaning from the components.
Mm.
But see, now we've got a lot of words. We've got a lot more words than they had.
Mm.
But we still add new words to the dictionary every
year. Oh, yes. Every year they have the Dictionary of Modern Usage or something.
The rate has decelerated greatly since Shakespeare's time.
Yeah, but the thing is that the English language has the most words of any language on earth. There are more words in the English language than anybody else has to
Yet we
to
still double up with
and we still
tear and tear.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the same. Right. They're still weather, and, you know, and all the rest of it. It's just amazing the way, and that's why English is so hard to learn, because you've got words that are spelt the same that mean different.
We must have been the smartest babies on the planet at the time then.
Yeah, but it's just one of those things. But now, of course, English is the international language. It used to be French, but now it's English. Everybody, everywhere you go, somebody will...
It used to be love. Now it's English.
Oh, right. The lingua franca was the word, but it is now lingua English.
Helen Adams Keller was born on the 27th of June, 1880, and she was an American author, political activist, and lecturer. But she was actually the first deaf and blind person to earn a Bachelor of Arts degree. And how on earth she did that with those two deficiencies in her skill set in front of her.
Well, I think
being deaf and being blind.
But she learned.
If you had one of those problems, you could probably make up with the other. But to have both of those really meant that she had to fall back onto touch and to vibration and pick up things like this as well.
But her teacher was very, very good. The woman that taught her everything that she basically knew, she was absolutely wonderful. And I think she learnt by touching.
The play, though, about Anne Sullivan's teaching.
Oh, yeah.
It's called The Miracle Worker. It had to have been some kind of miracle.
Well, she was a miracle worker, yeah. But it just proved that people,
deaf
those deaf people can
do the same things.
Yeah, yeah.
All they need is to have that deficiency compensated with others.
That's right. That's where Auslan comes in very, very well these days.
And with bionic ears and things like this.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Yeah, there we are.
But that's all about communications, and that's what Joy's all about. We're part of the communications world. And
if you'd like to communicate with us, you can do so.
Yeah, how do you do it?
Well, you know, the email machine, you might have one at home.
Oh, yeah.
You can write to beenthere@joy.org.au.
Oh, wonderful.
And we can peruse your communication.
And, of course, we've just had our wonderful radiothon where we raised over $300,000 to keep Joy on air. So
from there you go. The lovely listeners.
Lovely listener. That's,
and the members.
Yep, and the members that have kept us going. So that's really wonderful. Thank you very much.
We're needing that, because if we have to shift to the new Pride Centre coming up in a couple of years' time, just imagine all these studios have to be rebuilt and new equipment provided. And that'll cost us a mega bucks.
That's going to be...
So we've got to start squaring away a little bit of money each year.
They're talking about December 2020 for the opening of the Pride, new Pride Centre, but whether
it
happens...
those dates are as good as weather predictions.
Yes, I think so too. Yeah, because I was at the seminar when they were talking about it, and I just sort of happened to mention it almost under my breath, but don't hold your breath.
There's a time when I used to enjoy this particular song that we're going to play for you now.
Oh,
you
yes.
You know, it was sort of symbolic of my life. I love the nightlife, but I'm afraid I like my bed now.
I think we're all getting it that way. Phil and Chris, yeah.
And you're with Chris Gordon and Phil, been there, done that. Joy 94.9. And you remember this song from Priscilla. Here she comes, Alicia.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You're with Phil, Gordon and Chris. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. We're coming towards the end of our show, but we've still got a little bit of time to talk of a nice event before we go into some boring
bits. Which nice event are you talking
of? Well, I'm talking about an event that will be held next weekend in my favourite European city, Munich.
Oh, Munich's a lovely place.
It is, and for them, they are having their CSD, Christopher Street Day, and that's when they celebrate the Stonewall events, or the events of Stonewall, because it was a signature event that that indicated some freedom of human rights.
Is that their, like, Pride March Day?
Yeah, or? It is their Pride March Day. Yeah, that's right. So that's what they've tacked it on to. We don't have as much respect or recognition of Stonewall Day because we have our own events here in Australia. We've got the Mardi Gras Parade in Sydney. We've got the Tasty Raid here in Melbourne, where there was our rights were really proclaimed and we marked our spot. And the other states, I think, have sort of picked up. And because, of course, well, we do our midsummery type summer things in the warm season, whereas Pride Europe March does all these things. It was convenient for them to have it in their summer.
Well, you have to have it in summertime. It's no use having it in wintertime because you would never get anybody out looking or participating.
Well, no.
Well, not all of their clothing is complete, is it?
No.
Like some of their chaps seem to be air-conditioned. Oh,
but that's only in the summertime you can do that, Philip.
Well, imagine doing that in winter in Europe.
God, yes. Wouldn't be very nice.
Be enough to freeze a jolly good fella.
Yes. Oh. But the political scene is a very interesting one at the moment, isn't it?
Oh, it is weird and wonderful. Weird and wonderful. We just sort of mentioned about Macron in the French system. And, of course, Theresa May in UK
Angela
is
Merkel
on the skids there. Mm. She's probably not going. Well, she just had that little election and she didn't have as much
Theresa
success.
Falling.
Indeed. And I think there's another one coming up very soon where she might lose her position.
Well,
entirely.
I don't know whether they'll have another election in England because the people in England are sick and tired of elections. Oh. They've had the Brexit one, they've had this one that was not needed, and she should have just gone with what she had. But the one that's really coming to the fore, of course, is Angela Merkel.
Indeed.
Angela Merkel in Germany looks to be as though she's going to be the leader.
She's coming up for her fourth
election. Yes, and that's why I was reading an article that's why she's let them have a conscience vote on equal marriage in Germany. Even though she didn't vote for it, she said no. But because it got out of the way a thing that had been bugging one of her minor parties, because they're in an alliance government
coalition,
multi-party thing, but she has the main vote. And they needed
I
to
wonder if our Malcolm had words with her or she had words with him at the recent G19.
I think they were just talking about
G19.
I think the G19 conference was all about the other fellow that was the 20th. Did you see him go and stand on the end of the line?
He knew his place.
He just wouldn't go anywhere near Angela Merkel at all, because she has just said what he is and how he behaved with
her. They both go to the same hairdresser.
Yeah, but hers is much nicer.
Well, hers is a bit thicker. but she could have had a word to Malcolm and said, look, I didn't vote for this, but I let the people speak.
Well, the houses speak. Well,
the people's representatives. And it passed, and now it's out of the way.
It is, and give me good cred.
And this is what this Senator Smith has been saying. Get it out of the way before the next year's election.
The sky is not going to fall.
Of course it's not going to fall. But might
it's a certain freedom, not in just having equal rights, but thinking that your politicians and your elected representatives
are actually
working on your behalf.
Yeah, well, this is right. Well, they don't.
Just after their pay rise.
Yeah, normally they're only just there to make sure they get re-elected at the next election.
And their superannuation.
But anyhow.
We're not cynical.
We were going to talk about on the 17th of July, we had the Tsar Nicholas and the Russian family were murdered. We were going to
There's another peasants' uprising, isn't
that's
it?
That's right, yeah. We were going to talk about on the 15th of July, 1099, the first crusade, Christians entering Jerusalem.
Richard I, the Lionheart.
Murdering almost everybody.
Not a lot of happy endings in these stories.
No, on the 7th of July.
And it's still going on in that area too, by the way.
July in 2005, the London bomb attack put down to Al-Qaeda, where 50 people, including, were killed, and that was where the bus got its top ripped off, and then there was bombs in the underground. We're living in bumpy times at the moment, of course, with the Koreans doing their little bit of show and tell.
I think I have a feeling that is all a lot of show and nothing much else, because I think if Kim Jong-un ever started something, that'd be the end of him. Because
true.
The other countries, the America and China and everybody would just go in, and you wouldn't want to, and you wouldn't want to send a bomb to Darwin, for God's sake. The Chinese own it, don't they?
Well, yeah, that's right.
So you're suggesting South Korea might become an island?
Something like that.
Might lose a bit of the peninsula.
Yeah, yeah. But anyhow, we'll just see how it all turns out. When I was reading about it the other day, I kept thinking of the Cuban Missile Crisis with Fidel Castro and the Americans, Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy. And it sounds very, very similar, you know.
And to our younger listeners, if you listen to April Sun in Cuba, you'll learn more about that.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yes,
then. Yeah. Very good. Thanks very much, gentlemen. Thank you, dear listener, for being with us today.
Thank you, linesman. Thank you, ball boys.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, that's going on, isn't it? Well. Yes.
Are you bored with your job?
Oh, thank you, Bernard.
I don't know anybody that isn't bored at some time in their job, but he had the thing to say it. Yes, yes, I can understand that.
Tennis balls?
Yes, he had the tennis balls.
We should give him some bubble wrap. That makes everybody happy.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, we really would like if Bobby Venner and James McNally can actually arrange this for the rain fall down on me, because our gardens are so dry.
Yeah, dry.
It's dreadful. Mm. Thanks for being with us
again. But not before I get home, please.
Oh, all right.
Because I didn't bring my umbrella with me.
Yeah. Okay, then. Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.